We interrupt this program with a message from our sponsor.
Love. If you want it, you can have it. And not compromise, stifling, soul-killing love, but open, honest, life-affirming love. But how do you get it? How do you get this love?
By spending $14.99. For this low, low price, you get a workbook, audio tape, and most importantly, a chance at love. Cassette player not included.
It's going to take work. It's going to take introspection, but our love guide, workbook, and accompanying tape will walk you through the process to finding the love that you deserve.
For listeners of Talking Fast, we have a special offer. When you go to your local bookstore and furtively purchase our book, Facing the Cashier with Embarrassment, tell them that Talking Fast sent you, and you'll receive an extra workbook to give to the person in your life who's most suffering without love, like your hapless best friend or your moody nephew.
Welcome to another episode of Talking Fast, a Gilmore Girls podcast. I'm Suzanne.
And I'm Alexis.
And we're two longtime fans of the show, excited to rewatch and recap it along the way.
This week, we are recapping Gilmore Girls Season 4, Episode 20, called Luke Can See Her Face. The Netflix bio for this episode is, a self-help tape helps a depressed Luke realize who his soulmate is. Lorelai is stressed as the Dragonfly Inn's opening day approaches.
Dun, dun, dun. We are there.
And we are recording this on Valentine's Day, It will air a week later. And I felt like this was a perfect episode because it's all about love.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even make that connection.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's get into our first segment, which is going to be going through a review that we've gotten. This one is titled Talking Fast is Fabulous by Hazel F22. My niece's name is Hazel. I love that name.
It's a really cute name. Yeah.
And they say, what a fun podcast and clever title. It was so fun to participate in Gilmore Girls March Madness, which is far superior than the basketball one, if we're being honest. Sparkle emoji, coffee cup emoji.
And thank you.
That's a great segue into March Madness is coming up.
Mm-hmm. The basketball one, and more importantly, the Gilmore Girls March Madness. We are so excited. We've begun preparation already, and it was a blast last year, as Hazel mentioned, mm-hmm. and we are really looking forward to bringing it. It's going to be all of the characters again with different matchups, so we can see if somebody else wins this year.
Mm-hmm.
In future years, we might do things like ranking episodes, different things like that, but we thought, you know, replicate something that worked well again this year. And also, as always, feel free to leave us reviews on Apple or Spotify through email, so on and so forth, and we can read your review. You'll be featured in the podcast forever on the record. It's a great honor.
Wow. Yeah, the internet is forever, so
mm-hmm.
Wait, 15 minutes of fame. So what were your initial thoughts for this episode?
I loved it. It was so fun to watch. And like, we've been building up to this, you know, like at the end of every episode, we're like, oh, we're almost there, like the end of season 4. And it just felt so like momentous. And it was just a delight to watch. It felt so like big to me. And I have so much to talk about.
Yeah.
How about you?
Same. I loved it. I have pretty much no complaints about this episode. I mean, I did find a Friday night dinner in there, but it's great. It's like our first like episode that is basically all Luke, I think.
Yeah,
he's got the main storyline. Yeah, but it's like, I don't know, it's just so satisfying to finally see kind of from his point of view, like the camera's on him when he asks Lorelai to the, like, on his shoulder when he asks her to the wedding, and to, like, see her reaction and everything. It's just, like, it's wonderful. Finally. Slow burn.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Okay, but before we get into our slow talk for the slow burn, if you will, we're going to do some fast talking and recap the episode in 30 seconds. It is Suzanne's turn this week. I will pull up my timer.
I am prepared.
Wonderful. Yeah, I feel like there was a lot of scenes in the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. On your mark, get set, go.
So we start with Lorelai being stressed about being single and also about the inn opening. There's all sorts of stuff to remember. Meanwhile, we also get some stuff with Rory and Paris and Asher having almost a heart attack. But the main juice of the episode is Luke gets a self-help book to help him realize his love for Lorelai. And he also finds out that Liz and TJ are going to get married, and he convinces Jess to come to the wedding, and then he asks Lorelai out to the wedding.
There you go. 30 just seconds.
skimmed over a lot.
No, I think that was really good,
though. I forgot the zucchini patch.
Yeah, the zucchini patch, sleeping with the zucchini. I don't know if there's much else in terms of broad strokes. There's a fight at the bachelor party.
Oh yeah,
like Luke goes to New York to get Jess to come, like some stuff like that, but
yeah,
we'll get into that now slowly.
Cool. I actually have my Friday night dinner in the opening, the cold open.
Oh, just get it right out of the way. Yeah.
So we open with Lorelai opening her front door and seeing a cat on the porch. Mm-hmm. She picks up the newspaper and goes and calls Rory, and she's like, they know, the cats know I'm single, that I'm going to be a crazy cat lady. And that is my Friday night dinner. As everybody knows, I am a crazy cat lady. But yeah. I feel like we need to destigmatize being a woman or femme-presenting person and having cats. This does not make you lame, or this does not make you undesirable or lonely. I have three cats. I could never be lonely. I can't even go to the bathroom alone. So what do you have to say about that, Lorelai? But also those cats looked really cuddly. And I don't know why. I kind of want to know what the origin of the like spinster woman with the cat thing was, but it's ridiculous. I feel like it's kind of changed. Cats are, especially after the pandemic, people are more like willing to admit that they love cats.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to note if the reason that a cat lady is such and a spinster is because men don't like cats, that's a huge red flag, I think.
Mm.
Men not liking cats or not admitting that they like cats. You know, it's a lie.
I know. Yeah. There must be like a history of the trope of like the crazy cat lady or something. Like, I'm sure I would like to learn more about it too, because it, like, Lorelai's whole thing is that if she is this cat lady, like, it's a different stage of her life now and she's like no longer desirable or something like that.
Also, like, there's no shame in having an animal companion. It doesn't mean you'll never have a human companion if you want one. And there's also no shame in not having a human companion.
Uh-huh. I think it's like the spinster figure is like, like there's this person who didn't like fulfill the destiny that you're supposed to do. And like the prize of like the nuclear family, and people just can't imagine outside of that, like someone alone with whole freedom to do whatever they want. Like, they couldn't possibly be happy, right? And those cats can't possibly just be good companions and that kind of thing. I find it ironic that the show is writing this, because I'm almost certain plenty of people, like, I could have seen Amy Sherman Palladino being a cat lady. Like, I just, maybe Lorelai also, I think maybe part of this, Lorelai, I think, is a dog person.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
So I think she's a little prejudiced against cats here for a variety of reasons. And finally, I also think those cats were great actors. We've seen some good dog acting in this season, and now I'm glad to have seen some cat acting.
Yeah, they just sat so still and stared at her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My cats only do that when I have treats in my hands.
But I did really enjoy this cold open. And like the way that it's kind of serving to remind us that, oh yeah, Lorelai, she says apparently that she broke up with Jason.
Yeah.
It seemed more open and ambiguous at the end of last episode, but here it seems quite final, and Roy is trying to like talk her down from her paranoia about being a cat lady. And in general, it just kind of conveys Lorelai's general sense of distress right now, which we see in the next scene, which is the middle of the night. Like, it isn't only about Jason and her singledom, but also about the inn opening. And she's like making all of these to-do lists to like the inn's voicemail, which like just okay. Like, I feel like this show uses voicemail a lot, actually. And I'm like, you could write it down, but I mean, she does have a written down list later, but this is just funny because later we'll see Michelle is the one who listens to all of these lists in the end. But yeah, so she's stressed about that, and she makes her way to Luke's at like 5 a.m. because she's not sleeping, and she's already drunk all the coffee in her house, apparently. And like already, like, this is an episode about like Luke and love and Lorelai and whatnot. And it's already with like such a cute scene here where he like physically helps her stand up by like picking her up from the armpits and like helping her stand up. And she's like delirious practically. And he's like insisting she eat some oatmeal and all of this stuff. And then it ends with another like fun little Kirk element here. Like, there's not too much town stuff in this episode, but like, I think this is the only time we see Kirk in the episode. Mm-hmm. And it is about him wanting the table where Lorelai is sitting at. And he's like, why else would I be here this early? So Lorelai moves for him. And then he's like, oh, but the table here has a nice light that she moved to. So ridiculous. a good bit of humor there. And speaking of like tropes and things that just aren't true, there's also a line about how Kirk has not much going on in his life when Lulu is working. Yeah. I'm like, that's just the continued like Kirk not having a lot going on in his life. Yeah. It's just not true. Like,
he has so many if jobs. Anything,
if yeah, I'm like, if anything, he's working constantly.
Yeah.
So I'm like, Kirk, don't buy into that myth about yourself. You know, you have a lot going on. Have some self-confidence.
I wonder what his planner looks like, how he keeps track of all his jobs.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, I liked this as well. We also get a little bit of Luke, like, throughout the episode, and it starts here, encouraging Lorelai, saying that she can do it when she's stressed out and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, they're just, I don't know, he's just so supportive of her.
Yeah.
He even shows
really
up.
They're really vibing.
Yeah, he shows up for an inn tour later. Actually, that's the next scene. We're at the inn, and Michelle is sitting on the ground listening to all those messages. He's pretty angry about it. They don't have a front desk yet, so he has nowhere to sit. But then Luke arrives because Lorelai had asked him to come and see the inn. So he's here kind of for a tour, taking some time off from his morning lull, I guess. I thought it was a continuation of the joke from Rory's graduation where Jackson and Luke are like commenting on the architecture and everything of Chilton because Luke comes in here and he starts commenting on the banister that Tom has made. And Tom is pretty prickly about this. He immediately says that or basically calls Luke an amateur and tells him not to give advice to the professionals in a curmudgeonly way, which is very funny.
Yeah, I thought it was fun that Tom says don't kibitz, I think is what he says, right? Which is like a Yiddish, I think, slang word or just word that is about like offering unwelcome advice or something like that. So I like the like little, always like the bits of like Jewish culture that are like popping in and out of Gilmore Girls that you see more full on in Maisel, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really a humorous exchange between Luke and Tom there. And Tom was probably stressed too. So like, I don't blame him for being prickly at all.
And we rarely ever get somebody more grumpy than Luke is. So it was funny. But then Lorelai takes him into the kitchen and Suki introduces Lorelai to the new poultry supplier. I completely forgot his name. Sal or something
Sal's
like that.
Man or something. It's
okay.
Yeah.
And she is apparently trying to matchmake for Lorelai.
Like her and Jason broke up like yesterday. Yeah, exactly. Matchmaking is a little uncalled for.
And this guy, like, he does not seem like a match for Lorelai. But Lorelai, interestingly, takes advantage of Luke being in the kitchen looking at, like, the fancy stove and stuff, and pretends that Luke is her special person. Mm-hmm. And they have a very awkward, like, she gets him to put his arm around her, and they're both just standing there super awkwardly, and the poor poultry guy leaves, thankfully. Yeah. And then Lorelai and Luke pretend to not like touching each other, which we obviously know is wrong. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was just cute, like, as the beginning of Luke's trajectory in this whole episode is him, like, being used as a prop boyfriend for Lorelai. It was cute.
Yeah, I love the prop boyfriend bit that you'll see in romance. Like, mm-hmm. even within this very show, later on, Logan does that for Rory when she's at the party of all the men and yeah. stuff. You know, it's always just a fun thing. So yeah. it just offers such good dramatic irony here for those of us who have seen the show, you know, because we're like, mm-hmm. within a very short time frame, you will be together and this will be real. And like their conversation following this interaction when they're alone again is like just, I don't know, it's so ironic because they're like bemoaning how they're both single and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that's, like, this conversation is part of why Luke goes to get, like, his self-help book mm-hmm. in a scene from now. Because he's like, oh, I'm so single. Like, how can I fix this and all this stuff? And, yeah, we'll see how it goes for them. It goes pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, with a few bumps in the road.
Yeah, yeah. But before we get to that more fun relationship stuff, we have a bit more of the toxic relationship stuff with Paris and Asher in our next scene. Before that, we get a glimpse at the class that Asher is holding, and this was my Rory's bookshelf. Did you nominate it for anything?
No, I didn't, but I definitely wanted to talk about it.
yeah, because I'm always, like, really fascinated by the way Gilmore Girls chooses to, like, portray college, you know? Mm-hmm. And to be fair, like, their writers, like, whenever they choose to, like, show a college class, like, they have to kind of just make up, like, they almost have to lesson plan, you know, and they probably have a lot of other things to do. So I was like, what did they do here? What was their, like, best effort and all? And I was like, I kept pausing to see the chalkboard because I noticed it had so much written on it, and it just has random phrases. Like, it says, reflect on modernity, evaluating the assumption, philosophical systems, human nature. And then, like, in the middle of the board, circled, the time has come. And there's, like, some other stuff that I couldn't quite capture. And also, like, I noticed they all have this, like, bright red textbook that's, like, really bulky. Mm-hmm. And I, like, kept trying to find the title of it, too. And it seems to just say contemporary political fiction. So it's probably, like, an anthology or something. But I, like, Googled it. I don't know if it's even a real anthology. Like, it might just be a prop that they made. So it's just funny to, like, observe all of the little pieces of the mm-hmm. class that they're making. And the, like, conversation, the dialogue that we kind of come in mid-conversation. So it's hard to know, like, what they're even talking about in the first place. But Asher is kind of having this back and forth with a student who's kind of, like, pushing against him. Asher's talking about, like, political writing, and the student seems to be talking about propaganda and how, like, is it similar or different from, like, a political novel, something like that. And Asher says, propaganda reinforces what that person wishes to be told. And I was just kind of confused by that because I feel like propaganda is more about, like, what the writer wants to either, like, persuade you or communicate to you. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. They were just kind of having, like, a more, like, abstract conversation about literature, which doesn't always go anywhere like in a classroom like that. Like, as you can see at the end, Ashley's just like, oh, whatever. Like, how could I expect something logical from you, use? Or I don't know. It's just like, well, if you'd actually been looking at the text and like talking about the text, maybe you could have like been somewhere, you know, having a productive conversation. But yeah, that's a whole lot just to say. The representation with its strengths and weaknesses, I think, of college is my Rory's bookshelf here. What were you thinking about with it?
I was just really interested in his conversation about propaganda versus political writing. I do agree with his definition of propaganda, but I also agree with your definition of propaganda. I think, like, propaganda is meant to feed a vicious cycle of somebody wants to believe something, but first they're probably fed that belief as an ideal, and then goes back and forth. Like, I just keep thinking about the current state of things with, like, the rhetoric around the Israeli genocide of Palestinians, and how everybody, especially with social media and algorithms, we're fed propaganda that reinforces the belief we already had. So if you are like pro-Palestine, you're going to see a lot more information coming out of Palestine than you would if you were pro-Israel, and vice versa. So it's good to, like, you obviously, it's 100% okay to have a side. I think that's actually a good thing in this case. But you still have to, like, realize that a lot of what you're getting is just to reinforce a belief you already have, and you might be missing out on a lot of other information. I think that's what propaganda does versus political writing, which is kind of, it's trying to convince somebody of your political belief. But I don't think that you can say that political writing is not propaganda all the time. Or that propaganda is not political writing. So, yeah, I just was really interested in this debate. And I was like, which of the writers was reading some specific book and was like, this is what we're going to give him to talk about. But, yeah, I didn't like his demeaning of the students who were actually trying to engage in a debate.
Just to end the class, too. He's like, oh, whatever. Plus, I'm also like, well, aren't you reading fiction? Like, that's a difference. So college.
Very interesting.
Fun. Yeah, but the scene ends with Paris arriving, and Rory has a great comment about how Paris is using her as her beard, which is like, typically, you know, that's to help a gay person appear straight, you know, for appearances, but this is to make Paris be able to hide her relationship with Asher, which is, I don't know, even worse. And, but she has the news that she has been asked to go to Oxford with Asher over the summer, so she's feeling optimistic about everything. And I have to say, if there's any reason to be with Asher, to get to go on a summer-long trip to Oxford, that could be worth it. That's using your power to get something good for yourself. Like, But still.
I don't know if I'd want to do what you have to do to get that, but I would like to go to Oxford. Yeah, it'd be a
choice. Like, if you can make the choice, that's your choice. Like, it should be a free choice, and you can say yes or no.
I would love that. Scholarly.
More on that later.
Our next scene is at the bookstore, which we haven't been to for a while. And I am really convinced that Luke Googled some things beforehand, even though this was the early days. Well, I guess not really early days, but he obviously, like, asked Jeeve, whatever. That old search engine.
MapQuested the location.
To get the title of this book, because he is, like, in there. He knows what he's looking for. And he goes up to pay, refuses to let Andrew see the book, and just gives him $100, which is like, wow, couldn't you just give me $100? Especially in a bookstore, that'd be nice. But It was also funny to me that he was buying this book for $14.99 that came with the workbook and cassette. And these days, if you were to buy something like that, it'd be about $40, I'd say.
Yeah. And it would just be a digital download. Yeah, like, it wouldn't even be a physical thing.
Yeah. But anyways, he leaves with this book and then he goes back upstairs to his apartment and he puts in the cassette into the cassette player. Very old school. And it like explodes. Love.
I loved it because he's trying to be so secretive. Like, even within his own apartment, he's like practically like looking around to make sure no one's there. He like is hiding from everything. And then it's so loud and funny.
Yeah. And it ends up that this is a self-help book about allowing yourself to find love, kind of. So super out of character for Luke, but sometimes you got to do something out of character to get to where you want to be. And he's doing that. So
I like, as this was happening, I was like thinking, you know, what finally got him to make this move, you know, to like step out of his comfort zone. And he's so like uncomfortable and judgmental of the tape like the entire time until he has his an epiphany. So it's kind of like, why is he doing this? And like, why now? And, I don't, and a part of me is like, well, maybe it's finally like the divorce from Nicole and like all of the drama that unfolded at the end. And then, because for like a while, I feel like we've kind of been wondering, like, what's going on with Luke? You know, like, where's his head at? Like, what's going on with him and Nicole? Like, we've kind of been in the dark about a lot of that. And it's only recently that we got like, we see how hurt he was by him, her cheating. We see like how he kind of accepted it when he was fine with the divorce. And now we get like finally an episode like from his perspective more, like you said. So I feel like we're fine. They're finally kind of like letting us know where Luke's at. And it's like a turning point, a breaking point. I think turning point is more optimistic. And it's like for the better. So like, it is funny to see him making this change, but also see how reluctant he is still at this point.
Such a grump.
Such a grump. But, like, I'm so glad that he turned to, like I think the self-help genre is not, like, completely a good thing, like, necessarily. It can be very much, like capitalism anything, just people trying to, like, sell you books and, like, solve your problems in 100 steps. Like, it can be very fake, you know? But I think there's also, like, good exceptions and it's something like this. Like, this is genuinely gonna really help Luke, and it's like $14.99 is like a pretty affordable way to get therapy, you know? Like, that's essentially partially kind of what this is, of like reflection and introspection and stuff. So I don't know, I just really like the storyline of the self-help book and stuff.
I agree. It's we have never seen Luke really be introspective before, so it's nice that he is taking a tool to you to do it. I also thought another like impetus to this was probably Lorelai saying that she and Jason had broken up. And like, maybe because we pretty much at this point know that Luke has been pining for Lorelai, even though we don't get those words until later. But like, the timing's always been off, and maybe he was like, wait, I just broke up with Nicole. She just broke up with Jason. We're both single. The time is now. Maybe that's what the whiteboard was saying.
The time is now.
In Asher's class.
I love that. Yeah, it's all connected.
Yeah, I love it.
I did like in that earlier conversation when they were talking about how she went through a breakup. Like, I got the reminder that like Lorelai never told Luke about Jason at all.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Yet Luke was like, I kind of assumed you were dating someone because you never dress weather appropriate. And I thought that was such a good line. And I think it's also kind of like a fun cover up for like why the characters aren't always dressed appropriately for the weather. You know, it's like, oh, it's because, you know, they're in relationships, like they're dressing sexy. It's not that we're in California and it's really hot when it's supposed to be winter on the show.
Yeah, true.
Like, that's a good cover.
Yeah. I'm going to write down "The Time Is Now" for a title for the episode.
The time is now.
So after this, we go back to the inn for a really short scene where we see Dean again.
Dean.
He's Spock. Just so annoying. He's hanging pictures. Lorelai and Sookie are watching him. He says he'll fix something, and they're like being all doe-eyed about it.
Oh, you're a superhero. You can fix the wire on the back of a frame. Like, of course he can. Couldn't anyone? Like,
yeah, he's like he's working for a contractor. Obviously he can. But then they overhear, Lindsay, I guess, has shown up, and they overhear him and Lindsay fighting. And Lindsay wants him to go out with her and friends that night. And he's like, no, I picked up extra shifts so that we can afford all the things that you want. And they're just like fighting back and forth about this. Obviously, both on very different pages with very different expectations for their relationship. And Lorelai and Sookie are just like standing there. Watching
eavesdropping. I can relate to that. Yeah,
I know. Especially if they're yelling. I mean, you can't help it.
Totally. I know this inn is like empty. Yeah, yelling. Yeah. I found myself wondering, like, we've heard Dean say that Lindsay wants this townhouse, and in this conversation we hear she wants a car, and I wonder how much she like wants those things, because it seems to me like he's using that as an excuse to spend more time working so he doesn't have to spend time with her. And because here she seems more worried about how like she's so bored and lonely. It seems like that's what she needs from him. Like, she needs help from him. She needs company. Like, she doesn't bring up like, oh yeah, I do really want the townhouse. I do really want the car. So I don't. No, like, we never see her ask for those things, but I feel like definitely, even if she did, I feel like he has latched onto that as his excuse to just, like, completely avoid putting anything into their relationship, which is sad.
Yeah. One other thing I forgot to mention in this scene is we find out that the zucchini crop is having issues. So that's something.
Yeah. Dean and Lindsay are not the only people having issues. Yeah. Also the zucchini.
Poor zucchinis.
And Lorelai's having her own issues, I guess. Which does lead me to a nomination I had in this scene. Is my Lorelai's closet. And it's for Lorelai's outfit here. But it's more so me complimenting the wardrobe department. I think they're trying to let us know how stressed Lorelai is by giving her a bad outfit.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
In my opinion, it's a bad outfit. She's wearing like a white cotton like V-neck t-shirt and then has like this jean skirt on that I don't like. And it's not really like her. Like, she seems a little dressed down, you know?
Yeah.
Like more casual, but she should wear jeans. I don't know. The cut of the skirt is just kind of weird. And so that was just my theory that she's wearing an outfit I don't like because she could barely sleep. She probably picked it out in a haze, you know?
Yeah, it's probably true. I didn't even notice her outfit.
Oops. I could just be harsh about it, but I just noticed it. I don't know.
So our next scene is in Luke's truck, pretty much. He is listening to his tape, thinking, you know, and talking back to the dude. As he's driving, I thought this was very relatable. I also like to listen to podcasts and stuff when I'm driving, and I often have comments to add.
Oh, do you, like, actually say them out loud?
Yes.
Oh, nice. That's fun.
But I was also a little bit surprised. Well, maybe not. I guess I was going to say I was a bit surprised his truck has a tape player, but it's probably from, like, the 80s or something. So I guess it makes sense that there's a tape player, but I don't know. Yeah. It just seemed odd. And then we get another scene of somebody running up to a car and tapping on the window, just like when Dean did that recently.
People do that all the time in this town.
I know. It's so unsafe.
Liz did that to Lorelai when she was in Luke's truck, too.
Yeah. But it is Liz and TJ, and they have some good news. A, they're back in town. B, they are getting married. And Luke seems to have really come around to TJ. Like, he seems pretty supportive about it. He isn't being snarky or anything. Not really. And TJ mentions there's going to be a bachelor party. Of course, Luke is invited. TJ does some straight-faced joking with Luke about Luke being the best man, which Luke falls for. TJ's sense of humor is just so funny to me.
I love, like, when Liz says something that TJ has said before. She says they're grabbing life by the ping pongs, yeah. as TJ says.
He's got all sorts of like TJ-isms.
Mm-hmm. TJ-isms. That's good.
And then Luke asks Liz whether Jess is going to be coming. And Liz says that Jess has said he's busy, which Luke is not satisfied with. Mm-mm. And we'll see where that leads in a couple of scenes. But I'm excited to have Liz and TJ back. They're so much fun. They need to be around more. Me too.
Yeah. And like you said, I was glad that Luke here was so much more open to this. Mm-hmm. He was so much, like, he wasn't judgmental at all, pretty much. And I just felt like it was such a marked difference from the last time mm-hmm. he was with Liz and TJ. And like by the end of that episode, he seemed to have realized like his wrongs and he had come around and stuff. But that doesn't always mean like sometimes that growth happens. And then again, like he could have just been judgy in this episode, you know, like, but it actually stuck and he actually is kind to Liz and stuff and like joking that he'll wear a costume and all. He like gripes like, oh, I hope you don't like need help from me, and later we'll like learn he gets roped into it. But like it's mostly all good and it just is so much happier to see. Mm-hmm. And it's just like in general, this is such a good Luke episode. Like he's really turning a leaf. And yeah, it's a delight, you know?
Yeah. I wonder if any of his openness is also because of the self-help book. He's like really opening that heart up wide, you know?
I think so, honestly. Like, I want to ask that same thing when he's, like, talking to Jess mm-hmm. in just a moment. Like how much of this wisdom, you know, is coming from the book? And I think it is, you know. It could be impacting him.
Yeah. Such a good move for Luke.
Yeah, yeah. Before Luke's visit to Jess, though, we have a scene back at Lorelai and Rory's. It is a Friday night. Without the Friday night dinner, mm-hmm. because Emily and Richard have canceled. Sadly, this is part of the storyline where they are separated. Lorelai and Rory know what's going on. They also have their, like, Lorelai fills her in on the gossip about mm-hmm. Dean and Lindsay. Rory pretends to hope they'll make up, like, very clear.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And then there is no Friday night dinner, but I have my Friday night dinner critique in this scene. It's like their classic movie setup. You know, I think they have like food from Al's. Rory brought, what cookie did she bring? It was something.
I completely forgot.
Nutter butters. I don't know. Like Rory brought a dessert. Lorelai has like thrown in some carrots because she's like, oh, I'm afraid you're not eating well at school. But it's the very classic like smorgasbord mm-hmm. of food that is quote unquote bad for you. And they're about to feast and they're watching a movie as they're apt to do. And this one is called Fatso. Mm-hmm. And like the only clip they play from it is a crowd that is just chanting fat like over and over again. And had you heard of this movie before?
No, but I did make it my Rory's bookshelf, so I did a bit of research.
Yeah, do you want to share? Because I only briefly looked into it, yeah.
So this is an actual movie. It's from the mm-hmm. 1980s, and the beginning premise sounds like something really terrible. It's a guy who's overweight, and he has a friend who's also overweight who dies at a young age, and so then he's encouraged by his family to go on a diet, like a super restrictive diet. And then there's all this stuff about him like falling off the wagon, quote unquote, which is obviously going to happen when you're restricting yourself from mm-hmm. necessary foods. And his family treats him terribly and everything. But he also falls in love with a woman who is into him, like, regardless of his size, and he refuses to believe that she could be into him until towards the end of the movie. It sounds like they finally get together, and the movie ends with, like, his family obviously is still super negative about his weight and trying to get him to do all this stuff to lose weight and everything, but in the end he marries this woman, they have kids, and the movie seems to end with a montage of family photos of them happy, and he is still the same size throughout. And so, like, it's got this... I'm probably never going to watch this movie because also it sounds, like, triggering, but it's got this, like, kind of commentary almost on diet culture, it seems. Like, I could see Lorelai and Rory watching this as an actual let's make fun of fat people thing.
Right.
But the end message seems to be that you can be happy no matter what your size, and that's not what defines you. So,
yeah,
good ending message, but I don't trust Rory and Lorelai to pick that up.
Exactly. Yeah, because I was like, I made it my critique because I was so uncomfortable watching the scene as it is in the show. And then when I was reading about the movie, with the plot, I was like, eh. But by the end of the synopsis, I was like, oh, that kind of takes a turn. And without watching a movie, it's so hard to know, like, if they're in on it or if they're, like, not aware of what they're doing. If it seems to be a comedy, so that could go any number of directions. Like, are they... You know, like, what's the satire, all of that stuff. So I can't really say about the movie, but it's just like when you're thinking about how it's used in the show, it's like, what role does this, like, reference or this scene play within this scene in the show? And it seems like it's just yet another they're, like, entertained by fatness as they're sitting there eating the stuff that supposedly would make you fat but doesn't make them fat, like, I don't know, it's just so it's so unnecessary too is the thing. Like, of all the pop culture references they could make, like, it doesn't even fit, like, thematically within the show. Like, it could have been something about a single, well, I guess this the movie is about, like, a single guy, so maybe that's, like, why it fits, but whatever. At the end of the day, it's just like, it was just weird and gross, and I was like, classic Gilmore Girls, sadly.
Plus, Lorelai, like, she had watched the first 10 minutes and then saved it to watch with Rory. And it's like, you just know in those first 10 minutes was probably a whole bunch of, like, fat shaming. And Lorelai found that hilarious and wanted to watch that with Rory.
Yeah. And in the scene, like, Lorelai is going on, like, oh, you're so welcome. Like, I watched, like, 20 movies, and this is the one I picked for you. It's so good. And Rory's like, oh, thank you. And she's like, give mommy a kiss, like, on the cheek or whatever. They're acting like it's this, like, glorious cinematic masterpiece. Like,
I just can't get over the fact that Lorelai's best friend is Sookie, who is a fat character. And, the show is so clearly fat-phobic and, like, makes fun of fatness so much, but then we're supposed to believe that Lorelai doesn't hold any of those, like, internalized fatphobic ideas about Sookie. I just don't believe it. I just don't buy it. Like, there's no way those two things can coexist.
It's so, it's so strange. And it's also strange the way, like, for the most part, their storylines, the characterization, like, the stuff that they write for Sookie is pretty good, you know, actually. So, like, it doesn't seem like their fat phobia has, like, too much entered the way that they write Sookie. So it's like, how are the writers themselves also fragmenting that, like, compartmentalizing it? And then, like, for Melissa McCarthy to be, like, the by and far star, like, compared to all of the other actors now. Seriously. Like, I don't know. There's, like, so many things. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah. A study on fat phobia. That would be an interesting episode to, like, but it would require, I think, a lot of research.
Yeah.
But anyways. Our next episode, we're in New York, we assume, at this... I was not sure what to call this apartment, like, whether it's, like, a co-op type place, because that is a bad name on co-ops, or just, like, it's, like, in the, I don't know, 50s or 60s or whatever, there'd be, like, men's dormitories or whatever that, like, workers could go and sleep in if they couldn't afford a place, or were just bachelors and didn't have a place to live, or they were, like, in transient jobs. And that's what this seems to be. It's just, like, a flat full of probably terrible smelling mattresses and sleeping bags and like dirty young men. Mm-hmm. And this is where Jess is living. He is a messenger, it sounds like, as his job. But Luke shows up and is trying to convince him to come to his mom's wedding. And I think he gives a really good argument. He's kind of like unnecessarily mean to Jess in some instances.
Once again, yeah.
But he gives a good argument saying that if Jess doesn't go, he'll regret it. Jess had said, like, well, he'll just be there for the next wedding. And Luke thinks that TJ is different, but regardless, he's like, if you're not there and this is the last wedding that she has, you'll regret it forever. You'll regret that you weren't there to support your mom and all of that. And we don't really get an idea of whether it hits home for Jess yet because he runs out for work, but we'll see that it does in a little bit. So I thought, yeah, it was just an interesting scene. It's interesting to see where Jess is ending up and like kind of his trajectory from Stars Hollow to where we know he'll be later on. I think it's a cool trajectory. Like he goes through a lot, but ends up on top, kind of.
I found it interesting that Luke characterized his, like, all of the decisions he's been making as, like, self-destructive decisions. Because part of me was like, are they, you know, like, is he self-destructive or not? Because, sure, like, he's clearly living in not the best situation. Like, messenger is probably not his dream job. But, like, the other side of the coin is, like, he's just trying to support himself, like, in his life, you know, trying to be independent. But I feel like so much of Luke is coming from, like, you could do better for yourself. Like, you're capable of so much more. And so you're, like, by choosing to not finish high school, all of this stuff, like, you're kind of just, like, setting yourself up for failure because you're afraid of failing, stuff like that. So I don't know. But, like, I also, I did want to mention Luke's last, like, point that he makes when he's not sure that his talk is working. He says, well, you owe me. So he kind of makes a plea of, like, you owe me, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, we'll see how that's important. So do you think Jess is, like, being self-destructive?
I don't see this as self-destructive, especially because of the circumstance he's in. The self-destructive choices I would think of as that would be like turning to drugs or just any sort of things that he's clearly not doing. I just feel like he has ambitions that he hasn't told people about, which is totally fine. And because he hasn't told people about those ambitions, they see him as just like kind of drifting. But he's doing stuff. Like he has a job. He's living within his means, which is more than we can say for sometimes myself. But yeah, like he's doing well in his stage of life to get to where he wants to be later. We just don't know where that is yet. So I don't know.
Yeah. And then also I was wondering, it's not really a question because we learn later, but as I was watching the scene, I was thinking like, well, why does Jess not want to go, you know? Mm-hmm. And part of me was thinking like, oh, can he not get off work? Like, that's a very real thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Or does he not want to, does he not want to run into Rory was my other guess, which may or may not be right.
After this, though, we go back to Luke's for another really quick scene. Luke is on the phone trying to track down stalks of wheat for the wedding.
Sorry, those are bare-ass stalks of wheat.
And he's having some trouble because that's not a normal request. But Lorelai comes in and Luke tells her about the wedding. Lorelai kind of acts like she should have known about it, like she missed something. But like Luke just learned about this. Maybe like the day before. Yeah. And I don't think Liz and TJ are the type of people to send out invitations. They probably just have word of mouth invitations. But yeah, Lorelai finds out about the wedding and then Jess appears and he says he's not paying for a hotel, so he's staying with Luke and he goes upstairs. So we know that Luke got through to him. And he must have been like on the bus right after. Yeah.
How'd he get there so quick? Mm-hmm. I thought Luke got to New York and back really fast, too.
Yeah. But also, I never know the timeline of these episodes, so.
That's fair.
Could have been like 2 days.
Yeah. I think that it's a couple days or so, maybe. But from here, from Stars Hollow, we move to Yale, and we witness a fairly disturbing little mm-hmm. moment here with Glenn, who we've been fairly fond of before, but I can't say I'm too pleased with him in this moment. He's trying to pick up a girl, and it turns out that he's been spying on her because she leaves her blinds open. And he's like, well, you shouldn't leave your blinds open if you don't want me to spy on you, which is very creepy. We're not a fan of that. But the more important piece of news we get in this scene is a phone call where Rory learns that Paris is at the hospital. And this is kind of the second portion of the Paris and Asher storyline, as we'll see a bit later on in the mm-hmm. episode.
Yeah, drama with Asher.
Drama.
After this, we go back to Luke's, and Jess is upstairs looking through Luke's stuff. And he is about to start playing the tape to see what Luke is listening to. Luke obviously gets a bit defensive and tells Jess to go. I feel like there's something else in there that I'm completely missing about their conversation, but
they're talking about like dinner. Okay, like, that's so why Jess important. Leaves. He leaves for dinner, so it's more like of a plot reason okay. for Jess to leave. You know,
good. Mm-hmm. But right after Jess leaves, Luke continues to listen to the tape, which I think is interesting. I would have given Jess like 20 minutes to be out or something, but he does lock the door.
He does, yeah.
I would also say Luke should get a Walkman. That would be a funny sight.
Yeah, that'd be easier.
But this is the big scene where the guy on the tape is saying like he had a friend who was self-sabotaging or whatever. And he asked his friend these questions, and it's like, who do you want to tell, talk to when something big happens in your life? Do you see her face? and questions just like that. And you can see Luke, it dawning on his face as this is all going through. And we obviously know he's seeing Lorelai's face. Mm-hmm. But, like, I thought this was a great bit of acting just to see. How Luke was like going from not really paying attention to all of a sudden being like, wait, there's a pattern here. And then he mm-hmm. ends off being like, whoa, it was great.
Whoa. I know. I agree. I gave this scene my gazebo moment. Nice. I love the epiphany. I love the dialogue of the self-tape. Mm-hmm. Like the do you see her face repetition is just really clever. And the way that you see the realization like dawn on Luke's face, I did think, I agree, was like a really good bit of acting on Scott Patterson's part, because it's all just communicated through the face. So mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty impressive. And it's just such an exciting epiphany, because as viewers of A Slow Burn, you just spend all this time like being like, how dumb can you guys be? Like, so just finally to be like, oh, he understands is exciting. And I think, like, I still like it, even though it doesn't necessarily align with, like, everything else in their relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, we did have a listener write in a thought about the episode referring to the scene, and they ask, the scene with Luke always seemed to contradict the horoscope scene in season 5, episode 3. Does Luke always know it's Lorelai, or was it a revelation to him?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really good point, because I would also like also point to moments in the earlier seasons where like
it seems Jackson's quite date.
Yeah, like it seems quite clear that mm-hmm. Luke, you know, he was been on the brink of asking her out, like all of these other things. But I think maybe I would say that like maybe recently throughout season 4, he's just been like repressing it so much, mm-hmm. like viewing it as something like out of his not out of his league, but just out of, like, it's like a fantasy to him. Yeah. Like, he was like, it's just not going to happen at a certain point. And he just kind of, like, gave it up, tried to ignore it, that kind of thing. And now it's, like, a realization of yeah, maybe like, oh, now it's the right time. Now I have a chance. Like, or just like a, maybe I've been trying to hide from this, but now I'm like, I know, like, she is the one and I can't hide from that anymore. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, yeah, we've gotten a lot of scenes where we were like, these are almost scenes, like they're almost going to kiss.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, with all the Nicole stuff, I wonder if he had just like decided that when he got together with Nicole and everything, that he was trying to move on from Lorelai. And at this point, mm-hmm. he's like, wait, I never have and I never can. Or maybe he had like been kind of convincing himself it was just a crush. But this moment, he's like, wait, no, it's more than that. But yeah, I definitely see where this listener is coming from. And I think there is a lot of like, we do know that he's been into her forever.
Yeah.
But I do like that he like kind of sees the magnitude of how much he's into her in this moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it might be about like the scope of his feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like one thing to have a crush on someone versus like, yeah. I feel like in this moment he's being like, she's the one.
Yeah.
And that's like different when you're like, this person is for me, like nobody else forever. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that's kind of what he's thinking about here.
Yeah. He's also maybe realizing it's worth jeopardizing their friendship over finally. Yeah. Maybe yeah. that's why he has held off for so long.
Definitely. Yeah.
It's a big moment, a good scene.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Some good stuff.
Yeah. Next, we go to the hospital, and I gave Rory my Lorelai's closet for her interesting sweater vest. I just remember Argyle was such a thing at this point. I had, like, Argyle socks. I really wanted an Argyle sweater vest, but I couldn't. My mom would never get me one. Someday I'll have an Argyle sweater vest. But
there you go. Yeah.
Rory's choice of Argyle sweater vest is an interesting one. It's like most of it is kind of a puce green almost. And then just like the front, kind of almost like a bib panel just in the front, so it doesn't even like stretch around to the side at all, is Argyle. And it's like a blue and then periwinkle blue Argyle pattern. And it's just some of the like the strangest color combinations, and it's just it's very weird. But I don't know. Argyle gets me, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Rory's like in the elevator, confused about where to find Paris, and then as the elevator like goes up and they arrive at the floor, you can hear Paris before we see her. And I was thinking about like, when we see the hospital set, when the doors open, I was like, hey, this looks exactly like the hospital that Richard was at when the Gilmores went to visit. And B, Paris is actually making Emily look like a saint, because we were like, of course, we're talking about, oh, Emily, you know, just makes demands and she treats people badly and all of that stuff. But Paris like takes it to another level. Purely from the volume standpoint, like,
oh gosh,
like just keep it down. My God.
She's so mean to the poor, like, doctors and nurses. It's totally uncalled for. And she's also angry because, like, she's not Asher's next of kin, so she can't learn anything. Yeah, she's just out of control. We find out, like, once Rory pulls her away, we find out kind of the reason behind why she's freaking out so much. It's not just that Asher had to go to the hospital. He seems more or less like he's going to be okay. But it's that Paris is realizing that Asher is old, which Rory's just like, yeah, duh. And then Paris asks something really funny, which I gave my Jess sass attack. She's like talking about how she should be living her life being young again. She's like, I should be going to the discotheque. Do people still do that?
Like, yeah.
Paris, people haven't done that since before you were born. Or at least not called it that.
Yeah. And she's also like, I should be rollicking.
Yeah.
And Rory's like, I don't know if Asher ever rollicked. Like, he's British.
It's true.
It was some good.
Oh my gosh.
It was some good dialogue. But then I'm also happy, like, that Paris is finally having this realization. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's just a very realistic, like, event to happen. Like, Paris has been in this relationship with this older guy and she seems totally like awestruck by him. And then this seems like the kind of thing that would make her question it finally, mm-hmm. where she's like, he's old. He was like looking at the ceiling, like he was looking at death or something like that. Like, and I was also just confused by this because I didn't like remember this happening mm-hmm. at all. Like, I thought like, surely he can't be dead yet, because I remembered that happening later on. So yeah. I was like, what is happening? I also like did not remember the Jess scene earlier yeah. at all. Like, there's a couple like holes in my memory in this episode. In fact, I don't remember Jess like being in Stars Hollow either. I'm kind of confused why like that whole storyline is just missing from my brain.
And Lorelai stuff erased it all. Over.
Yeah. yeah. And maybe the Dean and Rory thing, part of trying to just like repress that. Maybe other things accidentally were, you know, mm-hmm. lost with it.
Byproduct.
Mm-hmm.
So after this short scene, we'll come back to the hospital and get a bit more drama there. But we go to the inn where Lorelai's like fretting over pillows and stuff. It's kind of like that point of being stressed and also a perfectionist where you are not satisfied with anything, even though you've already mm-hmm. like chosen good options. You just can't accept that anything's good.
Yeah, and you're also like not strategizing properly. Yeah, right? Like, she's kind of like embroidering these pillows or something like that, and it's like you're not prioritizing like what do you need done before mm-hmm. the inn opens. Like, the pillows will be fine. So she's just like needlessly worrying, because she's just beyond like being aware of that until later.
Yeah, they're all kind of delirious. Michelle mm-hmm. says that laundry is spelled wrong, and they go on a debate. He thinks it should be L-A-U-N-D-R-I-E, and then they go on a debate about the U. It's just like this kind of delirious conversation. And then Suki mentions that Jackson is sleeping with the zucchinis, which, of course, they also have to have a conversation about, like, Lorelai's disbelief that this actually means literally that he's sleeping with the zucchinis. Mm-hmm. But it does mean that he is sleeping with his zucchinis. Literally.
She just can't believe it.
Yeah.
And that does lead to a very fun scene
mm-hmm.
that we have to wait a little bit for. This episode has a lot like happening.
Yeah, it's a busy one.
You know, it's a busy one. Because not only are we gonna, like, we're gonna go to the zucchini patch, we're gonna go to the hospital again, but before that, here's a new thing. TJ's bachelor party is also happening concurrently. My gosh. As if you need another thing, but it is fun. You know, TJ and the dad from Wizards of Waverly Place are there.
What?
I think that was him.
I've never watched Wizards of Waverly Place, so I'm not surprised I didn't recognize him, but that totally, I'm going to check that. That makes sense.
I think it was him. Yeah. And Luke is there. TJ says, all I want to do these days is spoon your sister, which I thought was sweet, but also, you know, inappropriate to say to her brother, probably. They have a very fun conversation about how a lap is just an illusion.
Yeah,
the way TJ's
I love that.
Mind works.
I think I agree with him. Like, a lap is not actually a thing. It's not something concrete, you know, it's an idea.
An idea. And Jess enters the scene at this point as they're talking about laps, and I also question that Jess was invited to a bachelor party mm-hmm. of the person who's like marrying his mom. Seems a little inappropriate to me, but I think they just needed him here in terms of plot and all, so that there could be like conflict and stuff like that. But I do love that, you know, Luke is out of place here and he chooses to handle that by standing up. So like, he's like, if there's no lap, there's no lap dance. Whereas Jess is also out of place, but his choice is to read a book, which I just found so relatable. I don't think I'm nearly as good as Jess at like reading in public, though. Like, mm-hmm. I could get easily distracted in an environment like that, but I appreciate, like, I admire his ability to just like read the book like that mm-hmm. and just do his own thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder how much he's actually reading it and how much he's like just using it kind of as like a shield.
A shield, totally.
Because yeah, I would not be able to absorb any words that I was reading, so I'd have to go back and reread it all later.
Yeah,
but I would definitely
also
keep
like
it open.
What kind of book do you read at a bachelor party?
Yeah, that's a good question. Huh? I didn't see the title of that book at all.
Me either. Yeah,
but I mean, another reason why Jess is very attractive. He's reading
completely
a book at a strip club.
Yep.
Then we go back to the hospital where Asher is revived and he's come out. He looks fine, young and springy. And Paris is super awkward. but what's even more weird is that Rory is sitting out, like, waiting for them. And a young woman, probably about their same age, comes up and is looking for Asher. And Rory's like, he'll be all yours in a second or something like that.
Girlfriend,
yeah. Implying that she thinks that this girl is another one of Asher's girlfriends. I don't know. Affairs, whatever you'd call it.
Acolytes, I don't know.
But Paris and Asher, I guess... This comes before the other girl scene. But Paris and Asher sit down, and Asher seems to have overheard potentially what Paris had said about him being old. Or maybe he just kind of surmised, like, from everything that happened, she's probably going to be feeling this way about me. And he kind of starts to give her an out. He's like, I've been thinking about going to Oxford, and I don't want to... leave you alone all the time. I can go by myself if that would make you more comfortable. And then she's like, well, do you want me to come? And he admits that he would not want to be there with anybody else. Like, he wants her to be there. He's still all in, apparently, which is all Paris seems to need to hear. And she's kind of brought back from her fear of his looming death and wants to still be with him. So I thought it was a very interesting conversation. And
I was watching it wondering at what point Paris changes her mind, because she does go into it planning to break up with him, and Asher is like offering her that out. So that's like actually some... positive, I would say, about Asher, that I don't know if I've ever said anything good about him, but I will give him credit for like offering her a way out without like making her feel bad or something. Like, he kind of makes it convenient for her, but then she doesn't take that out, and I feel like it's because, one, like, when the second she like walks in that room, I feel like she's a goner, because he's no longer looking like death in the bed. He's like standing up, buttoning his shirt, like, for whatever, however, I'm not attracted to him, Paris is. So I feel like that's the first thing. And then also, like, the way that he makes her feel special and singled out, you know, like, he's, like, complimenting her. He calls her very unique, which is redundant. You don't need to say very before unique, like, it's implied. but he's also like, oh, I thought about all the places I'd want you to go. Like, she feels, you know, special. So I think that's also why she's a goner in that way. Cause like he's also like dissuading her of the doubts that she's had, where she has heard about like how he's a serial young dater, you know, like a new girl every year. And he's basically being like, you're the one though. Like,
yeah, you're different.
You're the one for me. Yeah. You're different. Yeah. So I think that's why she changes her mind. But I like that the show underscores by the end of the scene, like you're saying, when this young girl arrives, like, they still underscore how weird the relationship is, which I appreciate, because they have Rory mistake her as a girlfriend. And we learn this is not Asher's daughter. No. This is Asher's granddaughter. And she looks Rory and Paris's age. That is like... it's probably pushing it, but within the realm of like...
I just lost your sound.
Oh, I think I might have hit my mute button on accident.
Oh, okay, good.
Am I back? Okay. I think, I muted myself when I was saying that's unacceptable, and I like flung my hand, and I think I hit the button.
I think that the him her being the granddaughter, I was trying to do the math in my head because Asher is 60. So for her to be about 20, like Rory and Paris, 19 or 20. I mean, it's plausible if he'd had a kid when he was 20 and then they also had a kid when they were 20. But it's still like, it's a tight turnaround. My parents.
He's a pretty young grandfather.
Yeah. 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 My parents are like 62 and their oldest grandkid is 6. So it's quite a different. But anyways, I think that's probably not a point to dwell on. And yeah, so we end the scene with Paris still going to Oxford with Asher. Rory excuses herself very awkwardly. Almost like it felt to me like she was like giving finger guns as she walked backwards. That kind of vibe.
Pretty much. Yeah. From here, we go back to the bachelor party and two girls are mud wrestling.
Oh, gosh.
And what I will say like, if we're going to like objectify women for entertainment, we see pole dancing all the time.
Yeah.
Like at least mud wrestling, that's a bit different. You know, you don't see that all the time. It's a big production for the show, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But the main fight is not the mud wrestling, but TJ and Jess. TJ approaches Jess about the fact that Liz wants Jess to walk her down the aisle. Jess says, I don't want to do that. And they go back and forth about this. TJ knocks the book out of Jess's hands. He's the first thing, you know, and then Jess pushes him. And then they break out into a fight that has to be separated by the security. And they take them all out. I, for one, think that if TJ and Jess have stuff they need to work out, they should have mud wrestled.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah.
I
work it out, guys, you know?
I admit I was watching this and taking notes, and the whole fight must have happened like as I was looking away. It was like in a blink of an eye they were fighting.
It was fast, yeah.
And it felt out of character for TJ to do that, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't seem like a confrontational guy. If anything, I thought he would have said something like what he'd said to Luke earlier, just like, you're a dick. But to actually knock his book out of his hand just seems like it didn't quite seem right to me.
Yeah, and when Luke first met TJ, like, they had a lot of conflict, and never once did TJ like physically get involved with him. So I think that is a good point.
And TJ seems to like, he knows that Jess is young and kind of troubled, I guess you could say, like he's emotionally volatile, and TJ seems to know that pretty well. I don't know, TJ just seems too cool and collected to have acted like that, so I think they just put it in there so that I don't know, we could still think of Jess as like a problem child or something,
a bad boy.
Or give Luke something to yell at him about later. I don't know, it was just weird.
If anything, if they wanted to give that impression, they could have just had Jess start the fight.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it would be like, well, TJ. Or you could be like, well, TJ didn't know that the book would like. But as book readers, that's like throwing hands. You know? You knock my book out of my hand, I'm going to throw some fists.
Yeah. It's a big
deal. He doesn't have a bookmark.
Plus, as we just said, the book is like his shield. You knock it out. That's it.
He's on the defense. Yeah, totally.
But from here, we'll talk more about the fight in a couple minutes. But from here, we go to my Stars Hollow moment for the episode. Where is it?
Me too.
Nice. Where Sookie and Michelle and Lorelai show up to the zucchini patch where Jackson is sitting with like heaters around for the poor zucchinis. He's planning to spend the night out there. They all sit down because it's warmer down there, which is weird because heat rises. But anyways.
Don't worry about it.
Sorry, got a cat interlude.
Ooh.
But they also during this talk about how they're each going to give one thing up that they've kind of been obsessing over, which I think was a very good decision. Lorelai agrees to give up the pillows. Can you hear him purring?
Oh, I can now. Oh,
purr into the microphone. Okay, anyways. Michelle agrees to give up asking for 10 references for each new hire, which is just
can you imagine?
Crazy. I don't think I have 10 people's phone numbers that I could give. Suki also agrees to drop 2 of the desserts from her what would have been 8 dessert options. So now she just has 6, which is plenty, as Lorelai says.
Yeah.
And then they all just kind of lay down, look at the stars, take a moment, and it's just like a quirky Stars Hollow-y thing. Like, nowhere else would you see people laying down in a zucchini patch with heaters, but yeah. It works.
Yeah, it's definitely sweet and whimsical, and like they'll wake up later on in the next scene, but I feel like sleep can be very symbolic, right? Mm-hmm. And I think here it's also like none of them have been able to sleep, right? And this is finally like they've like made changes in their mindset. They're together, like being in the moment. It's kind of that community, and it's like what they need. And when they wake up, they're like restored and new beginning and all of that stuff. So I really like it.
Yeah. Also, I love zucchini. It's one of my favorite vegetables. It's so easy to prepare. Goes with almost everything.
Yeah, zucchini is good. I did mean to note that before I made a deal about like where does Jackson farm, and we talked about the zucchini patch, and it seems that maybe in a moment this is where we get the clue, but like it seems that the zucchini patch is like behind the inn.
Yeah,
which is weird. And that can't be where he's been farming, like, his whole time. So that's a bit unclear to me in terms of the Stars Hollow map, but it's okay.
Release the maps.
Release the maps.
Next, we go to Luke's, where Luke and Jess have gotten back from the bachelor party. And Luke is kind of... I don't know, he's kind of being mean to Jess again, but also in kind of a sassy way. Like, I kind of got the idea that he was a bit tickled by the fight.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's...
Because he's like, I haven't been in a fight since, like, the sixth grade. Like, how is this my life?
Yeah. But he says that he's kind of accepted Jess for who he is. He's he's not going to pressure Jess to be something different. Which is a lot of talk from Luke, honestly. We'll see if he follows through. But it's also kind of him, like, it's almost like a response to what Jess had told him when he was there last time, when Jess had kind of blown up at him about Luke being somebody who always wants to fix people and then gets disappointed when they don't do what he wants. And Luke here is kind of admitting that Jess isn't what he necessarily wanted for Jess, but it is who he is, and he has to accept that. There's a lot of he's.
Yeah, and he, like, also apologizes to him for dragging him down there, and, like, he's like, yeah, if you really don't want to be here and you really don't like Liz, then you shouldn't be here, which is kind of also, I think, a reaction to, like, Jess have saying, like, you get involved in everyone's life. Like, you're always helping, even if they don't ask you. And, like, it's all about you and what you think. And so, yeah, he does apologize here. But the conversation continues where Luke is like, well, yeah, you shouldn't be here if you hate Liz. And Jess says, I don't hate Liz. And Luke is like, well, you hate me then. And Jess is like, I don't hate you. In fact, I came here because it was important to you. Which is actually kind of a pretty sweet admission. And it shows that the part where Luke said, well, you owe me, that, like, actually did work on Jess. And he's there because of Luke. And so then at this point, Luke is like, well, then what can it be? Like, why didn't you want to come? And dun, dun, dun. It's because of Rory.
Surprise, things
in the show. All about Rory. And Luke is like, still? Like, really? And Jess lets him know that
after all this time, always.
I know, he like lets her know. I said I love her to her last time I saw her. And Luke is like, you just dropped the bomb and left. And I thought he was speaking for all of us in that moment. He's like, what? And then Jess is like, well, the ball's in her court and she could have contacted me. And here, like, this was almost my gazebo moment again, because I just love this self-help type bit. Here, Luke starts to give Jess some advice based on the self-help book. And he is saying, like, straight up facts. Okay, though, he's talking about, like, you need to have open two-way communication, and you need to, he's like, my friends, Philip and Judy, they had a problem. Philip was expressing intimacy as a favor, and it's not a favor. It should be given freely, and it's not a bargaining tool. And you used love as a bargaining tool, and you had expectations that were out of line from what you deserved. And Jess is just like, what the hell are you saying? And you're also like, you're the most dysfunctional person I know. And Luke is like, well, I'm better now. And I kind of believe him, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, it's the power of a good book and introspection, you know? Like, it's working.
Yeah. He leaves the conversation by saying, stay tuned. I love that.
He's really, like, the drama of it all. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great scene. Touching. They're both making progress, even if Jess's is still, like, he's still got a long ways to go.
He's moving at his own pace.
But he admitted that he did something for somebody else. That's something.
Yeah. And that he said, I love you to Roy. Like, he actually told that to someone. Very vulnerable.
Yeah. Yeah. He's making progress. He's growing up. Mm-hmm. Our little Jess.
It is just too bad, though, that, like, you learn that in the last few months, Jess is, like, maybe expected Rory to contact him, or thought that she could or maybe would. And the whole time, she's just been getting more involved with Dean. Just makes my heart hurt a little for Jess.
Yeah, I agree. I still don't understand.
Like, of all the, of all the old flames to get back with.
Exactly. Like,
why Dean? Not Jess?
Yeah. And I don't know, just when Jess and Rory broke up, like, when the season started, we were super confused that she didn't seem that upset about it. Like, there were a couple mentions here and there, but that was pretty much it. So I don't know, just I feel like they kind of, the writers kind of dropped the ball on making it a two-way street thing and just bring back Jess for a couple episodes here and there, but don't, like, try and really think about the emotional consequences of it, you know?
Yeah, it's certainly convenient. And, like, maybe they already had the idea of, like, going back with Dean. Maybe Jared Padalecki was more available.
Yeah.
It could be a lot of things.
Yeah. Weird. But after this, we go to a very momentous morning that starts off with the group waking up at the zucchini patch where they all slept the night and had the best sleep for a long time. They've been so stressed, but this was what they needed. And then, as we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, we're following Luke at this, like, the camera is behind Luke, so we're seeing his point of view, and he comes to the house, Lorelai kind of shows up with straw and stuff in her hair, and then Luke tells her that he's got this wedding coming up, you know? So in my gazebo moment, he asks Lorelai to go to the wedding with him, and at first it's, like, not entirely clear that it's a date. But I think by the end, Luke makes it clear. He's like, I'll come and pick you up. We'll walk together. And then he tells her she doesn't have to dress fruity, but she's going to dress a little bit fruity. It was just, I don't know, touching. Finally, it's happening. Lorelai is just, like, super taken aback by it all. But she's also, I kind of feel, like, excited. I don't know. Like, she definitely didn't hesitate saying yes. So, yeah, finally. It's happening.
Exciting. And as a result, Luke is feeling confident, feeling good. He goes back home. Jess is there watching TV. And Luke picks up the tape and the books and he drops them in Jess's lap and says, I'm done with them. And Jess is just left, like, the scene ends with him looking at the books curiously. And we're like, maybe this will change Jess's life too. We don't know.
I would caution Luke thinking that reading one self-help book and filling out a workbook may not be the only introspection he needs, but it is progress. So That's
in fact, I don't know if he holds on to all of these lessons in the relationship with Lorelai, such as two-way communication about like a child and all that. But
no big deal.
We'll get there later.
Yeah, I'm so excited. All the things are happening. We've got two episodes left, and it's all just gonna, I don't know, these last like 4 or 5 episodes of this season have just been bangers, all of them.
Banger after banger.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on a roll.
So
who was your MVP for this episode?
My MVP was Luke.
Me too.
He deserves it in this episode. He went after what he wanted. He did the whole self-reflection and everything. He got through to Jess. He supported his sister. Like, he just did everything this episode, and I'm proud of him. And he is the reason he and Lorelai get together. So,
that's
just wonderful. Why did you pick him?
Yeah, definitely for all of those reasons. And I just really enjoyed seeing the change in him and, like, being with his perspective in the episode. Because I think Luke as a character, like, can get pretty old after a while with me. Like, I think he had the fun start in the early season with, like, he was kind of a bit more, like, almost political. I don't know. Like, he had fun rants. He kind of, like, pushed back against the man. Like, he seemed grumpy in a fun way. And then it kind of just gets like, oh, Luke, he's angry. He's grumpy. Yeah. Like, it starts to get a little repetitive. And so here it was just fun to see a different side of him and him going, like, opening a new book and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So
literally.
I liked it. Yeah, literally.
Yeah, yeah, exciting stuff. Also, just a warning to all of our listeners. We've got 2 episodes left in this season. We'll have our usual season recap episode, and then we've got a couple of fun episodes lined up for you guys. And then we'll be taking kind of a longer hiatus than usual between season 4 and 5, but we will have a couple of things to sprinkle in there.
Can't miss us too much.
Yeah, while we're gone. We got some big stuff in our personal lives coming up.
Yeah.
But anyways, we'll be back next week with next episode.
Talk soon. Thanks for listening to Talking Fast, a Gilmore Girls podcast.
Don't forget to rate and review us and share us with your friends. Join us on Instagram and TikTok at Talking Fast Podcast.
And join the conversation by emailing us your thoughts, talkingfastpodcast@gmail.com.